Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. We're located on beautiful Vachon Island, Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian always brought to the... Brian started the Brown Briefly with his brought his high standards of intelligent discussions of current events, always laced with humor and empathy. Brian was very, very funny, by the way, which we never do mention, but he was a hilarious guy. Brian's motto was less is more, more or less, and of course he always offered a much, much more. Our Briefly panel this morning includes our legal eagle, our consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General and Fulbright Scholar, twice Fulbright Scholar, Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Indeed. We have our historian, professor, guardian of the galaxy, and down under aficionado, well, former down under aficionado, Dr. Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
My head is still down under.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
It's good to be here.
Especially this time of year with the rain starting. How many years did you do that?
25.
25 years every winter.
That's 25 Puget Sound winters that I missed.
Oh,
so if you know, you got the Anglophiles in Australia, not quite the Anglophiles. Is that in like an Austrophile?
Yes.
Yes.
Australasia.
Oh, there you go. That's
interesting.
You, then.
Interesting. Right. Well, by the way, that was the voice of our executive director of Vachon Household, playwright, full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer. Good morning, Amy.
Hello. Good morning.
Hey. And I didn't entirely mean to skip our defender of justice, Mariner Cyclist, former top secret engineer, Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin.
Still hanging in there with you guys.
All right. I'm glad to see it. Glad to see it. And I'm Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch of the Gene Bosch broadcast studio here in beautiful downtown Vachon. That always kind of reminds me of Northern Exposure, right? The downtown. Well, not quite, but...
We don't have the moose walking down the street.
No, but, you know, I did tell you, I saw a deer walking down the middle of the street one day. I thought, whoa, Northern Exposure, here we are, right here. Well, today is what we jokingly called the Truman Show. And the reason that we did that is because since I engineer the board, I don't like to have to do all the extra work of putting together a show. And it turns out it's really more work to do a Truman Show than it is to do a one where we have guests. But we do have a surprise guest that's going to be here a little bit later that'll tell us some stuff that I think you'll be interested in. But before we get started here, let's just, as we always do, go around the table, see what folks have been doing. Craig, we might as well start with you. What's been up with you this week?
Might as well.
Well, you're to my left here. You know, that's what I was thinking.
I had another very good week amongst all of the wind and rain. But I just wanted to mention, last Thursday, I had my morning scramble show, which is now archived on the voiceofvachon.org website. It was a tribute to the band. The band called The Band.
The Band,
right, exactly. It was their 1976 Last Waltz concert that we played music, Stephen Holtz and myself, my interim co-host. Mike Nichols couldn't make it. But, you know, it was The Band. There was all their greatest hits and all sorts of duets with Eric Clapton, Neil Diamond, Joni Mitchell, Van Morrison, Muddy Waters, et cetera. On and on and on, all these great people at at Winterland in San Francisco. So you can tune into that if you'd like to hear that at your leisure. And the other thing, on Saturday, I went to a Yule Frokost.
That's easy for you to say.
Twice. I know. Yeah. It's impossible to say it. Does anybody know what a Yule Frokost is? It's Danish. It's the Danish luncheon in the holidays that typically starts at, you know, 4 or 3 in the afternoon and goes for many, many hours of eating and drinking. So on Sunday, I was kind of a wreck. But on Saturday, it was a good time celebrating the Danish holidays early. But that's when they do it. So that was some of the highlights of my week.
All right. Well, that sounds like fun. A little hungover at the end. How about you, Amy? What were you up to this week?
Yeah, let's see. It was a week of getting stuff done. We went to the DMV. Oh. So Aaron and I will officially be Washingtonians in a few weeks. Very exciting. Yes.
You had a Colorado driver's license?
Yes, because who wants to go to the DMV license expires?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but okay, we did it. So we'll officially be Washingtonians. And let's see. Ooh, some exciting stuff. Speaking of shenanigans and playwriting, I think I met with Mick Kuhlman. And we're talking about some funny skits and shenanigans that might be showing up here or there. And I think I'm going to be participating in 1448 again.
Oh, man.
This year, coming up in January. Always a fun theater event. And what else did I get done? Oh, we had our board and staff holiday party for Vashon Household, which was great because we had so much to celebrate, so much community support this year, which was really excellent. And a nice chance to say thank you to a staff that has been riding the rapids all year with all of our changes. Mm. So it's been a busy December, sort of a shotgun start. Oh my gosh, so much happened. I didn't even talk about the fact that we went over to the Emerald Queen Casino on Thursday night to see their clairvoyance. Mentalists and illusionists. And it was a very exciting show.
Those folks just fascinate me.
Yeah, they even had a dog, Harry Houdini. And they did a trick with the dog. Needless to say, we were amazed and awestruck with our fellow audience members, and there was definitely some stuff where you're like, okay, I think I can kind of work out how you did that. But then there was definitely a few tricks where we said, how did they do that?
Yeah.
So we're living the holiday dream fast and furious and going to go see Come From Away this Thursday.
Oh, yay!
Yes.
And have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it.
Oh, you're going to just go nuts.
Yeah.
How many of the panel have seen it? No one has seen it?
I've long wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Craig, you've seen it.
Yeah.
But no one else has? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So excited. Yeah. This weekend, holiday parties, Christmas parties.
I'm excited to hear your report on
it. Hear the hot take on Come From Away. I only hear rave reviews from everyone who's gone to see it. So I'm very excited.
It's an ensemble group where they change hats and change jackets and change personalities completely. And it's just over the top. I'll be seeing it this summer down in Ashland.
Oh, nice.
I've seen it once. I'll be seeing it again. Can hardly wait.
Nice. Yeah. Very excited. Yeah. So holidays are off.
Yeah, I'm running right now. Indeed. Kevin, how about you, man?
Well, you know, speaking of changing costumes, Susie and I had a chance to go to the Nutcracker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And,
local one?
Here right at VCA. Yeah. All the local dancers doing their thing. And they talked about how many people that they had on cast, which is over 100.
Whoa.
And then they talked about how many costumes they had, which was like way more than 100. So, yeah. Pageantry. I mean, it was really great to see, you know, people who are here, the community who turns out on stage, the community who turns out to watch the people turning out on stage was really quite awesome. Yeah, it was really
great.
Enjoyed that.
Cool. How about you, Bruce? I see you nodding about the...
My grandson is in the Nutcracker. This was his third year.
Oh,
so he was one of the mischievous boys in the opening party. You know, sort
they
of.
Did a great job at mischievousness.
Oh, they did. They did. And then he was one of the rat soldiers fighting the nutcracker soldiers.
Yeah.
But he's had a great time. And, of course, it was first. We went on Friday, so it was first Friday, you know, opening a miniature show, Eric Heffelfinger's jewelry.
Right.
And then the beginning of the studio tour. So it was right. a really interesting weekend. But then also the Seahawks played on Sunday.
Oh.
And, man, they are going to the Super Bowl this year.
I think
have
you're
no
right.
doubt about
I
it.
I think you're right.
They, when everything is clicking, they are as good as any team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
How many interceptions are you allowed to throw in a season still get to the Super Bowl?
He
Sam
did
Donald.
It all on he did it all in last week.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
wait a minute. You sound like you're not quite a complete Washingtonian yet. There,
right? That's right.
You're still stuck in Denver.
Oh,
right?
No. I'm part of the proud tradition of our Seattle teams taking us all the way and then pulling the football at the last minute.
Yeah, well, they could do that. They could do that. But
it's a little bit of Lucy there, that's for sure.
And it's interesting. I mean, they're definitely a second-half team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's sort of the first half. You're sort of, God, what are these guys doing? I mean, the defense looked great all the way through the game.
Oh, yeah.
But, man, they came out in the second half, and the new guys, you know, sort of running it back for a touchdown, you know, on the first kickoff of the second half, and then, bam, Darnold was just right on target. And
well,
so when he's clicking, they're unbeatable.
They are. Well, yeah. But he and Jigwa or whatever his name is, they are just amazing. And I have to tell you that I waited until halftime, and then I went down to grab a shower. And I came back up, and the score changed. And I went, what happened? What happened?
And then take your eyes off
no,
the screen.
No, and then they ran it back, and I went, oh, my gosh, right. You know, 102 yards.
Oh, I know. It was fabulous.
Yeah.
I just want to digress for a moment. Amy, you're no longer the head of the chamber, but you were for quite some time and did a fabulous job. I see that the candy canes are up or almost all up. Do you know if we got any new ones?
I don't believe that there are any new ones this year, but they were renewed by the Eagles, as they are every year. And I do see they have LED lights this year. I think they look a little
brighter.
Different this year because they have some of them have LED instead of the
21st
old.
Century.
Yeah, 20. Well, you know, I'm curious too. The LED with the old scruff, you know, it looks a little. I kind of liked it when it had the like kind of lights you couldn't really see. It just really added to that whole, you know, lesser Vachon movement that I enjoy.
Less is more.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
More or less.
Yeah. There's a great story about the candy canes because they didn't use candy canes until 1970. And the chamber used to put up garlands across, you know, crisscrossing, you know, sort of cedar garlands crisscrossing, lighted garlands crisscrossing the main street. And then in 1970, they got a deal on these candy canes.
Oh.
And so, you know, and we've got some great pictures of the first year they were up. But 1977, they all burned up when the pharmacy burned because they were stored up in the second floor of the pharmacy. And so this was at the end of October. So they had a month, and they went out and they scoured the country for candy canes and could hardly find any because everybody had bought their Christmas decorations. So they got a few, and then somebody had a contact in West Seattle, and West Seattle had just decided to move away from candy canes to something else. And so they got a whole bunch of free candy canes from West Seattle and kept the tradition going. And now those candy canes are from, most of them are from 1977. So they're, what, 40 years old?
That is fantastic. And do I remember, was there a controversy around a dentist who said candy canes was a bad
for the teeth?
Bad angle? Yeah. I think
Tom
I remember.
Tom Skarsog.
It was Skarsog. Okay.
Oh, really?
Okay,
oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
Sure, sure.
Candy canes are not good for your teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, humbug.
Yeah. My two ideas are, you know, buy one new one a year because they're many thousands of dollars, right? They're very, very expensive. And then also mounting them, right? They need to come with a way to mount them. And so most of them now are made so that they hook into brackets that are pre-existing, which would involve PSC, installing brackets that would stay year-round kind of thing on the poles. But then also I kind of would love to see like an adopt a candy cane, you know, where you'd get a picture of your candy cane. And so to come for Christmas Future. The ghost of Christmas Future will be renewing our candy canes.
What's fascinating about these candy canes and the PSE guys who put them up, they don't just plug them in. They wire them to live wires.
Yeah. Really?
So don't try and steal a candy cane.
Yeah.
Whatever you do.
Well, you know, my connection to that whole story, which I did not know, by the way, until just now, was that I was living on the island and was a volunteer firefighter at that time. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was brand new, you know, baby. And I had turned down my Plectron, turned the volume down. And so I missed the whole downtown fire. Missed the whole thing. And the only reason I knew about it was the next morning, my pal's wife calls my wife and said, "Well, are you going to take some food up to the guys in town?" And she's going, "What? What are you talking about? We missed the whole darn thing." I spent the whole day then putting out hot spots. So I got involved, but. Yeah.
Thank you to all of our career firefighters at Vashon Island Fire and
exactly,
Rescue.
Exactly, exactly.
They will never turn down their Plectron.
Exactly. Oh, man. I was embarrassed. Well, my week was pretty boring. I spent my few waking hours, as it were, working on my place. Kind of trying to get some of the jobs caught up, you know. And I do have a very short story. I just went over to the dark side and bought a new Apple Watch here a while ago, and which I like, by the way, a lot.
It's not the dark side. Microsoft is the dark side.
Well, yeah, okay. But anyway, I was out digging post holes. Did I tell you this story? I'm digging post holes, and all of a sudden my watch goes, "I see you've had a serious fall. Shall I call 911? And I went, "What?" So I had to take the darn thing off to finish digging post holes. Anyway, that's my story.
Made for rural life.
Yeah. All right. So, hey, today is a significant day, as all days are. It is International Anti-Corruption Day. Now, that I find very interesting. I don't think it's applicable to the United States. Not this year.
Does not apply in United States, Russia.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And it's also Genocide Prevention Day. Now, that one I can get behind, for sure. But on a lighter note, it's also National Pastry Day and Christmas Card Day. And we got Christmas cards from our short-term guest that's going to be with us in a few minutes. That's pretty cool. I appreciate that. Today in history, I find this interesting. The very first edition of American Minerva, which is the New York's first daily newspaper, was edited by Noah Webster, by the way, is published from Wall Street. When was that? 1793. Can you imagine? Wow. 1851, the very first YMCA in North America was set up in Montreal. So, yeah, everybody's doing the song. I knew that was coming. I just knew it was coming. Okay, here you go, 1903. Now, check the date, 1903, Norwegian Parliament votes unanimously for female suffrage. So, 03, when did we pass it? 27?
21. It became 20 election, actually.
Yeah, so that time. Was, 17 years later?
It's pronounced suffrage.
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 Suffrage. Well,
that's a little joke.
Yeah. suffrage. The women get the vote.
Actually, Washington State, women got the vote in Washington State in 1910.
So, way ahead of the national.
Way ahead of the national. And, of course, Wyoming women got the vote in the 1890s, way before everybody
else.
Even
before Norway.
Right.
Okay, very interesting. Thank you. And one more historical event here. 1990, Lech Walesa, Walesa. Anyway, the guy from Poland became the first presidential election, direct election in Poland. Lech Walesa, how do you say
that? Did he win a FIFA Peace Prize for that?
I think he did. Yeah, I think he did.
FIFA.
Amazing that would happen.
I mean, there was a FIFA Peace Prize way
back. No,
there.
That was even before.
He won the real one.
The real one, yeah. Oh, man, don't even get me started. Can you believe that?
We've got one for you, Truman.
Yeah, I need one. I need one.
Should, I think we all should send in peace prizes now. Just thousands, millions, hundreds of thousands
this
of them.
Peace prizes.
Arrive at 1800 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, that would be great. I think that's a great idea. Yeah, and you could send a picture of yourself holding it up, you know, when you send it.
I really love the, it was a meme that was about, you know, you can get your free peace prize with an order of tiny shrimp.
Really? Oh, that is awesome.
I'm getting my Jim Beam Peace Prize from Sporty's with an order of mozzarella sticks.
Yeah, let's do it. It's just something else. Okay, my last bit of historical stuff. 2008, Governor of Illinois, Rod Bogdanovich, or whatever his name is, was arrested by federal officials for a number of alleged crimes, including attempting to sell the United States Senate seat vacated by President-elect Barack Obama. That is something else. He served 8 years of a 14-year sentence, and guess what? He was released by President Trump, who commuted his sentence in 2020. And then this year, in February, he granted him a full pardon.
All the best people. Yeah.
All the best people. Isn't that absolutely amazing? Gosh, I just... No way. Well, hey.
Time for a constitutional amendment.
Oh, I think there's no question of that. Man, oh man, or at least the 25th Amendment put into effect tomorrow, if possible. Delighted to have with us this morning, Marie Bradley. Good morning, Marie. Are you there? You have to get a little closer to your mic. You can leave your mask on. She's not feeling well, so she's wearing a mask. Can we understand you?
So I sat to the side so as not to spread my germs around here and missed out on the what we did this week. My last week wasn't real special, except for the Seahawks game.
Yes.
But the week before, just 2 weeks ago today, I was finally approved by the park board to continue with fundraising and more clearing at Inspiration Point.
And excellent.
Dennis at Windermere had made new posters for me, so I spent some days going around town putting up posters and going into stores that I had never been into. I just don't, you know, I'm old enough, I have most of what I need, and I just don't go poking around shopping, and it was really interesting and fun.
Pretty fun to see what's here, isn't it?
Yeah, so I talked to a lot of people and looked at things that I didn't even know existed, so that was fun. And we are going to start another round of fundraising, well, partly being here and the posters and using social media, things like that. I have a neighbor who came on board with me who's a lot better at social media and promotions than I am, and we're going to go for it. I would really like to wrap this up this year and get the project completed.
And we are talking about Inspiration Point,
I suppose I should give a little history. We've been a historical landmark and viewpoint. It started in 1920, and that's when it was first named, and it was just the best view on the island, and that was when everything was clear-cut. You could see from everywhere, but Inspiration Point was the best, and so they started to develop that. In 1934, there was a pullout was created, but the site remained largely undeveloped until the late 50s. In 1958, Islanders Bill Beamer and Keith Putnam led a community effort to build a rock wall and landscape the parking lot area. The Vashon Garden Club did the landscaping. And what I really liked about all this is it was just a big... It reminds me of So Vashon. The Vashon I knew, got to know when I moved here, is everything's potluck. People chip in together and do things. And when they were building that rock wall is made up of rocks from all over the island. Oh. And it was sort of like, bring any rock you can pick up, the heaviest rock you can pick up.
Really?
And so
that's fascinating.
They were supposed to have at least one flat side. Yeah. And so our aim this year with fundraising is to get those big rocks. Not everyone can pick up the same big rock. But like this year, I'm making a much larger than normal donation. I made a $1,000 donation. stocks went up this year, and I was able to carry a bigger
there
rock.
You go.
If you can only carry a small rock, we need those for the cracks too. So,
so people can collect the rocks and bring them to Inspiration Point.
No, we're not doing that.
Metaphorical rocks.
But
okay.
These are
well, I thought you
were metaphorical
actually do
rocks.
It. Okay, thank you.
I would like to.
I wasn't clear on that.
I would actually like to finish up the wall.
Yeah.
These rocks are green rocks, right? They're green.
Yeah, these
they're
are
green.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Now that makes more sense.
And they can come in all sorts of different sizes.
But, yeah. Yeah. You know, the bigger the better, I would assume.
Yeah, the bigger the better at this point.
Okay. Now I'm clear on this. Thank
this
you
radio
for
show
that
has helped me twice already. I came on I have the date here somewhere. I was on here a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
And just sort of introducing our projects, the foundation. Our foundation is, I should mention that, we're a nonprofit, a 501(c), and our goal is to support the Vashon Park District by helping to accomplish things that are off budget for them. Like Inspiration Point has had, it's always on the budget and it always gets bumped off by something that breaks or something maybe a little more critical.
Right.
And so this way, if someone donates money to the Inspiration Point clearing,
it stays
that's
there.
All it can be used for. It's not going to get used to fix pumps somewhere or repair a roof. It'll just be for that. Right. And we also have a project we're working on is the Tramp Harbor Dock removal, and we'd like to start collecting money for improvements at the public pool.
Okay.
And
so those are three projects that the Vashon Parks Foundation is
promoting.
All right, good.
And this, in the last year or so, we've had, it's been fun getting to know the photographers for these things. Ray Fortner did a really nice shoot and show program at the theater for Tramp Harbor Dock.
Mm-hmm.
And the photos of Inspiration Point are so fun. Mm-hmm. And I've met some new photographers too. Willie Marsh has taken some amazing pictures from up there, and Keith Pryor, and just all sorts of things are showing up. Hmm. That's fun. But
I have to mention that you mentioned Keith Putnam as one of the original back in 1950. Uh-huh. And for those of you who don't remember Keith, he was quite a famous architect.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, designed our high school, the round building of the high school that was eventually torn down, I believe. But that was his design. And, and he was an amazing staircase. He can make, he's kind of specialized in staircases, spiral staircases and all kinds of really interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I find that fascinating that he was involved in that.
He also had the largest collection of shorts that he wore.
Yeah, I believe he wore almost year round, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah, almost year round.
That is when he wore shorts.
Yeah.
The point looks fantastic, right? I remember mm-hmm. we used to be able to see the mountain and, incredible, but it looks so fantastic now. So what's next? Like what is going to happen in the next phase?
So we actually have gotten quite a bit of clearing done. Last December, Brian Novotny limbed trees, but we had, he bid on doing a certain number of trees. The park district takes over the bid process. And he got that done, and it's fabulous, but we need more. We have a fairly narrow view right now towards the airport in Burton. And if you stand in just the right place on a clear day, you can see Mount Rainier. But we really still don't have any view at all towards Tacoma. And to me, a viewpoint should be able to show you what's coming at you, mm-hmm. If the tall ships are coming, things like that. We want to be able to, and it gives a more sense of where we are on the earth to be able to see as far. And this year we've identified some more trees that need limbing that will really help. And I think some of those trees, when they're limbed, will be able to see towards Tacoma. Plus, they'll widen the amount of spaces you can stand and see Mount Rainier.
Exactly.
And
so, do you have a goal, a dollar goal?
Yes, my dollar goal for this year is $15,000, and that would cover. Well, that would more than cover 5 days of forestry work,
right.
And I think that'll be enough to really make a dramatic difference. We we're lucky this year we were awarded a King County Four Culture grant for interpretive panels up there. And that grant, the awarded us is for $14,900. It's a major gift.
Wow.
And I'm so thankful. But I want the whole place to be worth it,
sure.
You know, and we're Bruce Hallman here is doing the text and Sandra Noel's going to do the illustrations. And we plan on having three panels along the rock wall explaining things at the at what you're looking at from that spot. And then one out in the landscaped area showing the history of the road development and the park.
Which I was going to ask you, Bruce, in 1950, when this park was actually put in, mm-hmm. was the road paved? Was it a dirt road, or do you know?
Yeah, it was paved in the late 50s.
In the late 50s.
Vashon had the only paved road on any Puget Sound island up until World War II, when they paved Vashon Highway from the center to the north end dock. So all the roads on Vashon until after World War II were essentially unpaved except the main highway. And they built that road from Burton to Shawnee in 32, and then in 35, they extended it from Shawnee down to the south end. Before that, you had to go up over the hill and back to Wax Orchard Road to get to Tahlequah.
Yeah, I would think.
And so that really opened up Inspiration Point.
Right.
And in the late 50s, as Murray talked about, the community effort, you know, Keith Putnam and Bill Beamer put together a community effort. And it's just amazing. I mean, different parts of the island sent crews. The guys worked. The women brought lunch or dinner or snacks. I mean, it was a different time. You know, it was the 1950s. But basically, it was built by a community effort. And it's essentially what it is today. You know, the big round sort of table, if you will, came a few years later. And that was actually Cleve Bard found that in a storage yard in Seattle. And it was a millstone made for the Tsar of Russia that was being shipped to Russia in the early 20th century and got stuck in Seattle as revolution started to hit Russia. And it never left. And so it was sitting there. And then Cleve Bard found it. He brought it out here and set it up. And so that's that kind of table that's there.
That is fascinating.
And then the Mace family sponsored the rock. There's a big boulder with a sign on it that recognizes George Vancouver naming the island.
Right.
So those all occurred in that late 50s, early 60s.
Now, I assume that information is going to be on this.
Each of the signs. One of the signs will look up toward Burton, Docton Burton area. One will look over toward Maury and, Mount Rainier. And the third sign will look south toward the entrance of the harbor, Manzanita. Mm-hmm. And then, as Marie said, there'll be a sign at each landscaped area that will tell the history of building the road, the park, and the efforts that Marie has made to sort of get it cleared again.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The panels are going to be fabulous. I knew we wanted updated signage is what I was calling it, but it's really going to be interpretive panels similar to the ones at the Center Forest that Sandra drew, and Bruce could tell you more about the kind of little features they're going to have. There's going to be ways to translate, isn't there? Or there's
each sign will have a QR code on it.
Okay.
So you'll be able to go to a web page that will have more information. We're going to have it translated into Spanish and into Tlutzi, you know, the Shrobop's native language, and just sort of make it accessible in lots of ways.
And so much more historically accurate. The only historical note up there now is about George Vancouver, and I'm pretty sure he never stood there.
You know, pretty sure he didn't.
You know, it's... We can be a lot more accurate than that. There's so much that happened here that's interesting. We don't need to just glorify somebody a long time ago. I mean, I'm glad he came, but, you know, it's going to be much, much better. And I think the views will be nice, too. And we need to widen and improve the views. That'll also help with maintenance, where we've cut off the branches off a side of a fir tree, those are not going to grow back.
Right.
But the trees next to them that haven't been cut, those branches will just keep filling up the empty spot unless we cut those. So I think the better of a job we do now, the longer it'll stay nice, and it'll... I'm hoping that by next summer, we just have a fabulous spot. We have a new director at the Park District, and he's a... you know, just stepping into the job, and he had sort of expressed wanting to wait till 2027 to get on with the rest of this. And there's some real reasons I don't want to do that. First of all, Sandra and Bruce and I are all getting old, and we want to get it wrapped up. And
I'm not sure Bruce is going to agree with that.
No, I'm sure he won't, but I'm telling on him.
Yeah.
But also the grant, the absolute deadline it needs to be accomplished by is 2027.
Sure.
And there's no reason to postpone. I think the three of us are ready to move forward, and the South End Community Club's ready to help with some promotion, and we can just go for it.
Okay, so to finish up, how can people donate?
They can go to our foundation website at bashonparksfoundation.org and click on donate or click on projects first and see which one. You might as well earmark it.
Mm-hmm.
And they can donate that way. I've put posters all around town that have QR codes on them. Let's see how other... We accept checks, we accept cash, we accept anything. Right. And we're also going to have a little publicity and fundraiser thing on January 1st. We're going to have vehicle safety check at Inspiration Point.
Hmm.
And hopefully that'll get a lot of people just through. It's a free thing, but we'll accept donations.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have that from 1 to 3 on January 1st. And just it'll be checking people's turn indicators and brake lights and flashers and things like that. Just really as an excuse to get people to pull in there and stop, and I think it'll be fun, too.
Will be. All you hungover people can come there on January 1st and have your car checked out.
Yeah.
After the Boy Rex.
After the Boy Rex concert.
Yeah.
That's right, at the open space. Well, Marie, I really appreciate you coming in and giving us an update on what's going on there, and we wish you the absolute best of luck with this. I think you're going to do fine. Do you have any last comments for us?
Oh, I feel like I'm forgetting something for sure. But, I did want to recap a little bit of the stuff that we've accomplished this last year.
Do.
So, since January of 2025, the Beachcomber published a big article with photos that was done by Bruce and Terry Donnelly, and it... had Inspiration Point information. We had a big work party, or not so much turnout, but the work was big. We had a work party in February and cleared some just horrible brush off the south end of the rock wall. We submitted our grant proposal to King County, and we're awarded that. So that was really huge. And we had fun at festival. Festival was wonderful. We had a dunk tank, and it was so fun. And I don't know if that really promoted our projects at all, but we got to know a lot of people, and it was fun. And we actually got $1,000 for our general fund for the foundation, and that was a real weak point. I was also on the radio here for Give Big Day last year for a few minutes, and I asked people to give small. We needed money for our general fund then. We'd need to pay things like our P.O. box and, you know, web fees and stuff like that. We were doing that out of pocket at first. So it was really nice. I feel the foundation itself is in a lot stronger place right now. But we really could use some board members, too. We're very skinny. Mm. If one of us gets sick, we're out of business. So we definitely could use someone with some good experience and skills and enthusiasm for the parks to join our board. And so I guess now we're just going for it again, and this time we're trying to bring the awe back to Inspiration Point, make it really amazing. I think people are definitely appreciating the new views, but it could be so much better. Mm-hmm. You know, we've almost got it good enough, so now it'll really make a difference. And I'm looking forward to this winter's work. And I guess that's all I can have for today.
Well, once again, if you want to get involved, it's VashonParksFoundation.org. Mm-hmm. And you can get on there and sign up to help or to donate to the projects. And you can earmark it for which project you're interested in. And we, I guess at this point, we just wish you the absolute best of luck with it, Marie.
Thank you.
And come back and tell us something more about in 6 months about what you did this
winter. I would love to come back with some bragging rights of this wonderful new park that we have. New
old park. Take pictures and show them on the radio.
Yeah. That's right.
Anyway, I appreciate you guys a lot, and we'll keep in touch.
All right. Thank you very much, Marie. Appreciate it. Okay, folks, so on our, since this is a Truman Show, as it were, I came up with something that I've been thinking about specifically since the Secretary of Defense and the Pentagon in particular, coming up with this legal versus illegal orders and some of the issues there. And what got me thinking is, what do we think about leadership? The term leadership, and how does that affect all of us, and how do we respond to our quote leaders? And so I would like to go around and each of you briefly, I have a series of questions, and I'll just run through all of them, and then each of you can talk as you will. But like, who in your life, either personal or professional, do you recognize as a leader, and why do you recognize them as a leader? And can you give an example of an incident where that leadership guided you, or have you had an experience where that leadership failed and forced you to step in and do something? And so those things are important. And I just would like, Craig, can we start with you? Have you just answer those questions? First of all, who in your life is a leader, do you think?
Well, I've had the great privilege of having any number of people I would consider leaders, but the one that I picked was my first boss after I became an attorney, Judge Harold Petrie down in Division II of the Court of Appeals. I was his law clerk, and I remember the first time my job as a law clerk was to write these pre-hearing memos based on the briefs, and they were shortened versions. They were the cliff notes, if you will. And you'd give those to the judge before the argument, and they would review those, and then they'd go in and hear the oral argument and go back and look at the briefs. And that was their first introduction. And the very first thing I did was have to prepare one of these pre-hearing memos. And I worked on it pretty hard. You know, I was nervous and whatnot.
So is this like a one-page?
Well, that's another issue.
Oh, okay.
But this one involved, I think, 42 assignments of error. It was just kind of unusual. Yeah. It was a first-degree murder case.
Oh, boy.
And my memo was, I think, 4 pages long. And I which is not bad. And I handed it to the judge, and he looked at me. And he goes, is this the best you can do? And I thought, is this the best I can do? And I did, is it too long? Is it too short? And he goes, no, I haven't even looked at it yet. I'm just asking you, is this the best job that you think you can do?
Whoa.
And I thought about it for a while. And I thought, wow, well, that is a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had another week to work on it, it might be better. But I think it's the best I can do. And he goes, why don't you take it back to your office and work it on it a little longer and then come back when you can say it's the best you can do. And he really, and he did it very, very gently.
Kindly, yeah.
And very politely, with great integrity. But what he did was he engendered responsibility and accountability in me right off the bat. That was the bar.
that everything I gave him was the best that I could do. And it was a great lesson. It went along with everything else he had going for him. He was a man of great self-awareness and authenticity and integrity. The lack of integrity in our so-called leaders that we have now may appeal to a bunch of people, but I don't think it's got staying power.
Mm-mm.
At least I hope it doesn't have staying power. And this gentleman, who's no longer with us, this judge, he was the chief judge of the court at the time. He was just a marvelous ethical individual, and he taught me a great deal about not only the law but about leadership in general.
There you go. Wow. That's very impressive. Very impressive. That kind of boggles at the mind for me, really. Amy, how about you?
Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, I think there's about as many ways to lead as there are ways to be a person. You know, everyone has their own way to lead. And so, you know, I think, you know, I know as many leaders as I know people, probably. But a couple folks that I've worked with, one gal I worked with when I was in college, she was, you know, president of California Now. And, you know, there's always infighting among progressive organizations, which, you know, I view as robust dialogue that improves us overall. You know, but one thing that she said that really stuck with me is, you know, I do what I know is right. And I know that, you know, there will always be folks with feedback. But I do what I know is right, and I move forward with that. And if folks want to join me in that, then they're welcome to do that. And if folks don't want to join me in that, then they're welcome to do that as well. And that really, I think that really stuck with me, sort of. And, you know, also I think about, too, there's a good show about Catherine the Great, a funny show called The Great. Anyway, you know, one of the things that Mad Monk Rasputin said to them, you know, we started talking to them was, you know, that they live on the edges. You know, they were folks who lived on the edges, and edges are sharp. And so, you know, edges are sharp and they'll cut you. And you know, I think if you are leading, a lot of times you will get cut sometimes, you know, there will be, you know, people with different takes, or you'll fail. You just kind of get up and get going. Cause that's what it means, right? In a lot of ways, is to be on the edge of something. Right. And I'm a big fan of leading from behind, you know, leading from the middle, a lot. I really like to do that, but, you know, the word itself, lead, kind of implies that you're
out in front,
out in front. Right. Yeah. And, you know, Captain Joe over there with his icebreakers knows a little bit about what it means to be out in front. So that's some of my thoughts, some of the impressions that I've taken away.
Excellent. Kevin, how about you?
You know, there's individuals that you can sort of look back on, and I know the way you posed this was, you know, what person, for example,
I'm looking for qualities.
What comes
too to
mind for me is the attributes of different people, right?
Thank you.
And so there's this notion of leadership mentorship that sort of comes to mind. I remember I worked for a fellow named Kirk Johnson, and it was one of my early assignments to stand up and give a presentation in front of the customer. And so I did that, and I sat down next to him after I was done. And he leans over and he said, you need to improve on you did this, and you did this, and you did this, and they were not good things, and we can fix all of those things. But I also had a chance to work with, in my line of work, a lot of people in the military. And I was just always sort of impressed with this notion of military leadership. And I don't quite... It's not being in the military myself, right? I'm not quite sure how that evolves. If it's just that all the training that you go through is that you eventually, the people who are selecting the right kind of people to fill their shoes, say that person has what it takes. Maybe you don't know really what it takes, but you can see what it takes. But the main attribute that I see is that people who are willing to open up space for others, right? Open up space for others, be willing to step in when required. The other thing that I saw was in some of my colleagues in Indivisible years ago now, there was a state organization that was forming, different than the one we have now. And there was leadership to try to pull that together. And that leadership was challenging. And in one sense, the processes and the policies that were proposed were really not very efficient. And this notion that leadership is about recognizing when you can be most supportive of the people who you'd like to follow you, right? And the harm that gets done if you don't really have those processes sorted out is kind of another thing. The last thing I'll say is that I think the way that we pose this question is maybe more about people who aren't in a leadership role but are called upon to be leaders. And the notion that the friend of mine who's served a lot of time in the Army can identify the exact rank of the person who will be called upon to execute an order, mm-hmm. who they may be questionable. And whether that A6 or whatever it was, you know, whether they would actually step in and do what they were asked to do when there was some evidence that it wasn't appropriate for them to do those things. So I think that's an area of leadership that's really important for us going forward right now.
Boy, I completely agree. That's fascinating. Bruce?
Well, you know, not to be too sentimental about mm-hmm. it, but my dad was just a great leader in mm-hmm. the sense of not only in his work, and, you know, he did some interesting kinds of things, but also just in terms of, you know, in the family. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just sort of, he was a very kind man. Mm-hmm. And that kindness goes a long way. And particularly in this society right now, when we see a just an abysmal lack of kindness at the very top of our society right now. You know, and he was gentle, kind and gentle. And that makes great leadership mm-hmm. in lots of ways. But he was also very interested in exploring experiences for us as kids, you know, try everything, you know, and that a good leader, I think, encourages you. And going back to what Craig talked about of just being the best you can be, you know, and you don't have to be the star because mm-hmm. you know, there's only room for a few stars, but you can be the best you can be. You know, and then the other thing I think I learned from him was the power of collaboration. Mm-hmm. The power of alliances, the power of bringing people together with a similar vision. And you don't, sort of like what Amy talked about, leading from the middle or leading from behind. When you build collaborations and alliances, you don't need to be out there carrying the flag. There's lots of people to carry the flag, but they need help getting it organized and getting moving.
Need that support.
It's that old SDS, lead from behind, you know, just get the group moving in one direction and leaders will emerge.
Yeah.
And your role, in effect, as a leader is to make sure the environment's correct so that the right leaders can emerge at the right time. I think that's really important. And I learned a lot from my dad.
Well, you know, I'm going to throw one in for my father as well. Yeah, he was a rancher and a mm-hmm. you know, a very practical guy. I mean, he could build anything. It wasn't real pretty ever, but it was functional. But I remember an incident in particular that really struck with me. And I can't remember exactly. We were working on a tractor. He and his hired hand were working, trying to get an implement installed on the tractor, something along those lines. I was about 13. And they're working and working and working. And finally, I said, well, Dad, how about if you do this and this and this? And his hired hand jumped all over me and said, you know, get back out of the way and, you know, be quiet and, you know, we're working here. Oh, man, my father jumped all over this guy and he said, no, he said, we're going to listen to what he has to say because he got fresh eyes. He may be able to tell us. So what were you saying? So I explained what I thought and he listened very carefully and he said, well, that's a good idea, but that won't work. And here's why. And he explained to me why. But that is so impressed me that he was willing to listen to me, you know, and that, I think in that terms of leadership, that is so important to listen to the people that you're leading. I mean, that's what, as Amy was saying, that's where that leadership from behind comes, is that you're paying attention to what your people that you're supporting. A favorite story of mine, I was interviewing a number of people for a project that I was working on, and I interviewed a mechanic up in an aviation mechanic up in Juneau, and I asked him. I said, "What do you attribute to your your success? And he said, well, you know, I always try to remain humble because, you know, even the dumbest guy in the room knows something you don't. And I went, whoa, I got to write that down. But isn't that true? Even the dumbest person in the room knows something you don't. So pay attention to what they're having to say.
And I just, you know, one thing I, you know, when I kind of think about the, an odd thing that came to me is sort of about leadership is that nobody really talks about because it's boring is predictability. Mm-hmm. You will find that I think a lot of many, many people that you look to as a leader, they're predictable, not in a bad or a boring way. But for most things, you can kind of, you know, if you ask yourself a question, you kind of think like, where are they going to go with that? What's their take? You know what their take is, right? And to me, that predictability is based on, you know, it's integrity. It's about someone who has laid a foundation of consistent actions and words and deeds again and again and again, such that you understand where they're going to go on a thing and how they're going to react to a thing. And predictability to me has become this really weird hallmark of leadership.
You know, that's really interesting. The other thing I was going to point out is that, you know, I was in the military, and when I was thinking about leadership in the military, I could not think of any situation that, except for senior enlisted guys, which Captain Joe can talk about, there's where a lot of the leadership came because these guys knew what the heck they were talking about. But in the airline industry, probably the best captain that I ever flew with was a woman named Christy Gomez. And this was in a three-person crew in the 727. Not only was she a superb pilot, which she was, I mean, just amazing. In her off time, she put on aerobatic demonstrations. I mean, this woman could really fly. But not only that, she ran the crew in such a way that you always felt needed and your opinion was valid. And I took those attributes to heart. And I can tell you, I've got just a very short story. I came out to fly one day. I was a captain, came out to fly one evening, terrible night. I may have told you this story before, but the weather was absolutely terrible. We're going up into Southeast Alaska, which is very unforgiving. I had a brand new co-pilot. This was his first trip out of training. And I mean, very first trip out of training. And he had all the paperwork was organized. The cockpit was set up. I was like, whoa, even the coffee was made. I mean, this guy was amazing, right? And so we sat down and went through the paperwork and talked about the weather. And I could tell he was a little bit nervous. So I said, tell you what, how about I fly tonight and you fly tomorrow? How would that be? And he went, really? I went, yeah. He said, oh, that'd be great. But somebody had done that for me once, and I thought, you know, that is, to me, that's leadership in taking the, being willing to take that for the team and yet, you know, to give him a chance to get the experience that he needed. But anyway, hey, folks, we're just about out of time, but boy, I can see us going on and on for this topic for a while.
So what we've laid down is some of the things that we've noticed are missing within our leadership.
That we have.
Yeah, and I, you know, shout out to Captain Kelly. Wow. Mm-hmm. Really proud of him right now.
Well, you know, that's what it's all about. It's paying attention to all the people that you have to lead and make sure that you're leading in the right direction, I guess. So, Amy, do you have next week?
Next week, well, I do know that the honeybees are going to be in here, spreading a little Christmas cheer. So I think we might have a little Christmas cheer theme, holiday cheer for everyone next week.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, so for Bruce, Kevin, Craig, Amy, and Marie, who's here for a short while, I'm Truman, and I appreciate all of you listening, and thanks a lot for tuning in, and we will see you all again next week.